Chapter 4. Ferro Comitante. 1. The battered hierophant hung before the wallfish, a bright point of light against the black backdrop of space. The jelly ship was larger than any other vessel Kira had seen. It was as long as 7 UMC battleships placed end to end, and almost as wide, giving it a slight ovoid shape. In terms of mass, it was equal to, if not greater than, a structure like Orsted Station. But unlike Orsted, it was fully maneuverable. To Kira's dismay, a trio of smaller ships had taken up positions in front of the battered Hierophant, extra firepower ready to defend their leader should one of the human ships get close enough to threaten. The Hierophant and its escorts were only 7,000-some clicks out, but even at such a relatively short distance, nearly in spitting range by the standards of interplanetary travel, the giant ship was no more than a fleck of light when seen without magnification.
"Could be worse," said Sparrow.
"Could be a hell of a lot better, too," said Falcone. Aside from Itari, who had insisted it would be fine in the cargo hold, all of them were crammed into the Wallfish's storm shelter. No one looked particularly fresh, but of them, Joris and Vera seemed the most tired, the most drawn. Their normally impeccable robes were wrinkled, and they fidgeted in a way that reminded Kira of the wireheads back in Highstone on Wayland. But they were alert, and they listened with sharp-eyed interest to everything being said. When questioned about their choice of attire, with the exception of Kira, the crew had traded their normal clothes for skin suits, the Entropist said,
"We are most well equipped as we are, thank you."
Whereupon Nielsen had shrugged and shelved the suits she'd been offering them. To Kira's amusement, the First Officer and Vishal stayed on opposite sides of the shelter, but she noticed secret smiles passing between them, and their lips often moved slightly as if they were texting. Shedder's face appeared in the upper right-hand corner of the display. Behind her, the jellies were moving about as they prepared their ship for what was to come. Trig's cryotube was visible by a curved wall, secured in place with several strange-looking brackets.
"Captain Falcone,"
said Shedder. There were deep bags under her eyes, and Kira realized the woman didn't have access to any stims or sleep pills.
"Major, have your crew stand by. We'll be in firing range soon."
"Don't worry about us," said Falcone. "We're ready. Just make sure the knot gives us cover once we go hot."
The Major nodded.
"They'll do their best. We've still got clearance from the jellies."
A grim smile stretched Shedder's face.
"They'd be shooting at us if we didn't. As is, they're expecting us to bring the Wallfish to the Hierophant so their techs can pick through its computers."
Kira rubbed her arms. It was happening. There was no going back now. A sense of inevitability curdled in her veins. The rest of the crew looked similarly apprehensive.
"Roger that," said Falcone.
Shedder gave him a terse nod.
"Wait for my signal. Over and out."
She vanished from the hollow.
"And here we go,"
Falcone said. Kira pressed on the earpiece Hua Chung had given her, making sure it was securely seated, and then used her own overlays to check on the progress of the battle. The Seventh Fleet had scattered as it neared the jellies, drawing them out and around the rocky planet the aliens were strip-mining, luring them toward a pair of small moons. The planet had been dubbed R1 by the UMC, the moons R2 and R3. Hardly elegant names, but convenient for the purposes of strategy and navigation. Clouds of smoke and chaff obscured most of the UMC ships, invisible light at least. They showed up fine in infrared. Sparks flashed within the clouds as the UMC's point defense lasers took out incoming missiles. Unlike their spaceships, the Jellies' missiles weren't substantially faster or more agile than the UMC's, which meant the Seventh was able to destroy or disable most of them. Most, but not all. And as the lasers overheated, more and more missiles slipped past. The shooting hadn't been going on for long, but 3 of the UMC cruisers were already out of commission, 1 destroyed, 2 incapacitated and drifting helplessly. A cluster of jellies were attempting to board the pair, but Admiral Klein's forces were working to keep the aliens tied up, away from the crippled vessels. As for the jellies, hard numbers were difficult to find, but it looked to Kira as if the UMC had destroyed at least 4 of them and damaged quite a few more. Not enough to put a serious dent in the jelly fleet, but enough to slow the first wave. Even as Kira watched, projectiles slammed into 2 of the UMC ships, both in the engine area. The rockets sputtered and died, and the cruisers tumbled away, powerless. Near the leading edge of the Seventh Fleet, a jelly jinked at speeds and angles that would have flattened any human. A half dozen of the Seventh's capital ships fired their main lasers at the vessel, impaling it with crimson threads. The lights on the jelly ship went out, and it tumbled end over end, spraying boiling water in an ever-expanding spiral.
Oh, yeah, Kira murmured.
She dug her nails into her palms as a pair of jellies darted towards a hulking battleship that had somehow ended up alone by the moon R2. Lasers flickered between the battleship and the jellies, and both sides fired several missiles. Without warning, a white-hot spike shot out from one of the battleship's missiles, snapping across almost 9,000 clicks in the course of a second. The spike obliterated the incoming missiles and vaporized half the nearest alien ship, like a blowtorch blasting through styrofoam. The damaged jelly ship spun like a top as it vented atmosphere, and then it vanished in an explosion of its own, the annihilating antimatter creating an artificial sun that quickly dissipated. The remaining jelly corkscrewed away from the battleship. A second spike erupted from one of the two remaining UMC missiles, a white-hot lance of superheated plasma. It missed, but the third spike from the last missile didn't. A nuclear fireball replaced the alien ship in the holo display.
You see that? Said Kira.
Hua Chong grunted.
Kasaba howitzers.
Anything from Gogorovich? Kira asked, looking over at Vishal and Hua Chong. They both shook their heads, and the doctor said,
No change, I am afraid. His vitals are the same as yesterday.
Kira wasn't surprised. If Gogorovich had recovered, he would have been making constant comments. But she was disappointed. Again, she hoped she hadn't made things worse by using the soft blade, using the seed to touch his mind. Cheddar reappeared in the hollow.
It's time. Much closer, and the ships guarding the battered Hierophant are going to get suspicious. Prepare to launch.
Roger, said Falcone.
Sparrow. On it.
A hollow thud sounded elsewhere in the wallfish, and the woman said,
Howitzers loaded. Missile tubes are open. We're ready to release.
Falcone nodded.
All right. You hear that, Cheddar?
Affirmative. The knot of mines is moving into final position, transmitting updated targeting data. Stand by for go.
Standing by.
On the other side of R1, a UMC cruiser vanished in a flare of light. Kira winced and checked the name. The Hokulea. Vishal said,
Ah, poor souls. May they rest in peace.
A hush descended upon the storm shelter as they waited, tense and sweating. Falcone moved over to Kira and put an unobtrusive hand on the small of her back. The touch warmed her, and she leaned back slightly. His fingers scratched against her coated skin, light and distracting. On her overlays, a line appeared.
Nervous, Falcone?
She sub-vocalized her answer. Who wouldn't be, Kira?
If we make it through this, we should talk, Falcone.
Do we need to? Kira. The corner of his mouth twitched.
It's not required, but I'd like to.
Falcone. Okay. Kira. Nielsen's eyes lingered on them, and Kira wondered what the first officer was thinking. Kira lifted her chin, feeling defiant. Then Cheddar's voice intruded.
We're a go. I repeat, we're a go. Light them up, wallfish.
Sparrow cackled, and a loud thump resonated through the hull.
Who wants fried calamari?
2. The wallfish had been decelerating tail first toward the battered Hierophant. That meant the ravening torch of nuclear death that was the wallfish's fusion drive was pointed in the general direction of their target. This had two advantages. First was that the drive's exhaust helped protect the wallfish from missiles or lasers that might be fired at them from the jelly flagship or its escorts. Second was that the amount of energy, thermal, and EM radiating from the drive was enough to overload almost any sensor aimed at it. The fusion reaction was hotter than the surface of any star, and brighter, too, the brightest flashlight in the galaxy. As a result, the Kasaba howitzer that Sparrow had just released from the wallfish's aft missile tube, portside, would be nearly invisible to the drive's blue-white incandescence. And since the howitzer was currently unpowered, its own rocket cold and inactive, it would continue past the slowing wallfish without any need for a burn that would attract unwanted attention.
T-minus 14 seconds,
announced Sparrow. That was the length of time the Kasaba howitzer needed to pass behind their shadow shield and reach a safe-ish distance from the wallfish before detonating and sending a beam of nuclear energy racing toward the battered Hierophant. The bomb would be going off far, far closer than any sane person would be comfortable with, and, excluding Gregorovich, Kira liked to think that they were all quite sane. The shadow shield ought to protect them from the worst of the radiation, same as it did with the rather nasty byproducts of their fusion drive. Likewise, the storm shelter. The main risk would be shrapnel. If the explosion blew a piece of the howitzer's casing into the wallfish, it would cut through the hull like a bullet through tissue paper.
T-minus 10 seconds,
said Sparrow. Hua Cheng pulled her lips back, made a disparaging hiss between her teeth.
Time to get a year's worth of rats, I think.
By the wall, the two entropists sat holding hands and rocking.
T-minus 5, 4.
Shit, they're turning, exclaimed Cheddar.
3.
No time to change, said Falcone.
2.
Aim for
1.
Kira's neck snapped to the side as a violent application of the RCS thrusters pushed the wallfish off its current trajectory. Then the ship's acceleration surged at what must have been at least 2 G's, and she grimaced as she fought the sudden press of force. Less than a second later, the wallfish shuddered around them, and Kira heard several pings and pops across the hull. On the display, a burning spike of light raced toward the battered Hierophant. The jelly ship had already rotated halfway around, so that its drive was hidden from view, and it was continuing to turn, reorienting itself away from the wallfish.
God damn it,
muttered Falcone. Kira watched with horrified fascination as the blaze of plasma flashed toward the battered Hierophant. Lafette and the Knot of Minds had given them precise information on where the Hierophant's Markov drive was located. Hitting it and breaching the antimatter containment within the drive was their best chance of destroying the ship. Otherwise, they had no guarantee that the Kasaba howitzer would kill Katane. As Atari had explained, even the smaller jelly coforms were hardened against heat and radiation. And as the UMC had discovered to their dismay, the creatures were incredibly hard to kill. A jelly as large as Katane, whatever its current form, would be far more resilient. It was, as Sparrow said, more like trying to kill a fungus than a human. Black smoke billowed out of vents along the swollen middle of the alien ship, a threatened squid hiding itself in an ever-expanding cloud of ink. But it wouldn't provide any protection against the howitzer's shaped charge. Few things could. The lance hit the belly of the Hierophant. A hemisphere of vaporized hull exploded outward, along with a haze of air and water that had flashed to steam. Sparrow groaned as the view cleared. The nuclear charge had carved a trough as large as the wallfish through the battered Hierophant. Its main drive appeared disabled. Propellant spurted from the nozzle, failed to ignite. But the bulk of the vessel remained intact. Lasers and missiles shot forth from the Knot of Mines toward the 3 escort vessels near the Hierophant, even as the trio turned to attack. The wallfish released its own cloud of defenses, shrouding the ship in darkness. The display switched to infrared.
Pop off another howitzer, said Falcone.
We've only got 2 more,
said Sparrow.
I know, fire it anyway.
Aye, aye, sir.
Another thud echoed through the hull, and then the Kasaba howitzer streaked away from the wallfish as it headed to the minimum safe distance for detonation. The missile never reached its destination. A jet of violet spark spewed from its nose, and then its rockets sputtered out, and the howitzer went tumbling harmlessly off course.
Fuck, said Sparrow. Laser took it out.
I see that, said Falcone, calm. Kira wished she could still bite her nails. Instead, she found herself clenching the armrests of her crash chair.
Is Katane dead?
She asked Cheddar.
Do we know if Katane is dead?
The Major shook her head in the hollow. Lights were flashing on the deck behind her.
It doesn't seem so.
An explosion rocked the jelly ship.
Are you okay, Major?
Nielsen asked, leaning in toward the display. Cheddar reappeared, appearing shaken. Frizzy strands of hair had come loose from her bun.
We're okay for now, but more jellies incoming,
Sparrow announced.
A good 20 of them. We got maybe 10 minutes. Less.
Of course,
Falcone growled.
You still need to kill Katane, said Cheddar. We can't do it over here. Half the jellies with me seem to be sick.
I don't, Morvin said. Admiral Klein for you, Captain Falcone.
Put him on hold. Don't have time for him right now.
Yes, sir, said the pseudo-intelligence, sounding absurdly cheery given the situation. A blinking yellow light appeared in the hollow, heading toward them from the battered Hierophant. What's that? Joris and Vera asked, pointing. Falcone zoomed in. A dark, blob-like object about 4 meters long came into view. It looked as if several intersecting spheres had been welded together.
That's no missile.
A memory stirred in the back of Kira's mind. The storage room where she'd seen Dr. Carr and the Jelly Quan fighting. And on the far end of the room, a hole cut into the hull. a hole glowing with blue light emanating from the small vessel that had clamped barnacle-like onto the outside of the extenuating circumstances.
It's a boarding shuttle, she said, or maybe an escape pod. Either way, it can cut right through the hull.
There are more of them, Vishal said in a warning tone. He was right. Another dozen of the blobs were heading their way.
Major, said Falcone, you have to help us take them out, or...
We'll try, but we're slightly busy, Cheddar said.
One of the Hierophant's three escorts exploded, but the other two were still firing at the knot of mines, as was the battered Hierophant itself. So far, the knot hadn't lost any of their ships, but several of them were trailing smoke and vapor from hull breaches.
Falcone said, Sparrow?
Already on it.
In her overlays, Kira watched as lines flashed between the wallfish and the incoming blobs, laser blasts highlighted by the computer to make them visible to human eyes. She bit her lip. It was horrible not being able to help. If only she had a ship of her own. Better yet, if she were close enough to tear apart the approaching enemies with the soft blade. Then the interior lights flickered and Morvan said, Security breach in progress. Firewall compromised. Shutting down non-essential systems. Please turn off all personal electronic devices until notified otherwise.
They can hack our systems now? Cried Nielsen.
Joris and Vera said, Give us root access. We can provide assistance. Falcone hesitated and then nodded.
Password sent to your consoles.
The entropists hunched over the displays built into their chairs. Ruddy flashes appeared within the smoke surrounding the battered Hierophant, missiles being fired. Alarms blared. Morvan said, Warning, incoming objects, collision imminent. The missiles shot out of the smoke and quickly overtook the approaching blobs, some hurtling toward the knot of mines, and the rest, all four of them, racing toward the wallfish. A fresh charge of foil chaff launched from the rear of the wallfish. The ship was still decelerating, but the missiles rushing toward them were accelerating even faster, and the distance between them dwindled with horrifying quickness. The wallfish's laser stabbed out. A missile exploded. Sharp blast, there and gone. Then another, closer this time. Two left.
Sparrow,
said Falcone from between his teeth.
I see it.
One ship of the Knot of Mine shot down the third missile. The fourth one kept coming, though, evading the incoming laser blasts with brutally fast jerks up, down, and sideways. A sheen of sweat coated Sparrow's unblinking face as she concentrated fire on the incoming projectile. Morvan, caution, brace for impact. At the last moment, when the missile was nearly upon them, the wallfish's blaster finally connected, and the missile exploded only a few hundred meters away from their hull. Sparrow uttered a triumphant shout. The ship rattled and shook, and the bulkheads groaned. More alarms shrieked, and smoke poured out of an overhead vent. Half the lights on the control panels went dark. A strange burst of noise sounded from the speakers. Not static. Transmitted data?
Damage report, said Falcone.
In the display, and in Kira's overlays, a diagram of the wallfish appeared. A large section of the hab ring, as well as the cargo holds below, were flashing crimson. Hua Chung stared like a person possessed, while her lips moved with murmured queries to the computer. She said,
Deck C and D are breached. Cargo hold A. Massive damage to the electrical system. Main laser is offline. Reclamation unit, hydroponics bay. Everything has been affected. Engine working at 28% efficiency. Emergency protocols in effect.
The machine boss gestured and brought up the feed from an outside camera. Along the curved hull of the wallfish's hab ring, a large hole cratered inward to reveal internal walls and rooms dark, but for an occasional flash of electrical discharge. Falcone made a fist and thumped the arm of his chair. Kira winced. She knew how much the ship meant to him.
Thul,
said Nielsen.
Itari!
Falcone barked. An image popped up in the hollow, showing the jelly climbing up the center of the ship. The alien appeared unharmed.
What about Morvan?
He craned his neck toward the entropist. Their eyes were half closed and glowing with the reflected light of their implants. Vera said,
Firewall restored, but some sort of malicious program is still in the
mainframe. We've confined it to the waste management subroutines while we try to purge it. Vera made a face.
It's very, very resistant, said Joris.
Yes, said Vera. It is probably best to avoid using the head for now.
Again, the pseudo-intelligence announced.
Warning, incoming objects, collision imminent.
Fuck!
This time it was the jelly boarding vessels. One was headed straight for the wallfish, the others for the knot of mines.
Can we evade?
Falcone asked. Hua Chong shook her head.
No, not possible with thrusters. Aish.
Howitzer?
Falcone asked, turning on Sparrow. She grimaced.
We can try, but there's a good chance we'll lose it to their countermeasures.
Falcone scowled and swore under his breath. In the hollow, Cheddar briefly reappeared and said,
Saved a nuke for the battered Hierophant. We're going to try to get you past their point defenses.
Roger that. Morvan, drop thrust to 1G.
Affirmative, Captain. Dropping thrust to 1G. The corresponding alert sounded, and Kira breathed a slight sigh of relief as the weight pressing on her returned to normal. Then Falcone slapped the console and stood.
All hands on deck. We're about to be boarded.
3.
Shit, said Nielsen. Looks like they're heading for the breach in the cargo hold, said Sparrow.
A knocking sounded on the pressure door to the storm shelter. Vishal opened it, and Atari's tentacled shape pushed forward, filling the frame.
Atari here. What is the situation?
Kira here. Wait, I do not know.
6 minutes to contact, said Hua Chong.
Falcone tapped the grip of his blaster.
Pressure doors are sealed around the damaged areas. The jellies will have to cut their way through. That buys us a little time. Once they're in the main shaft, we'll ambush them from above. Kira, you'll have to take point. If you can kill at least two of them, we can probably handle the rest.
She nodded. Time to test words with action. Falcone started for the door.
Out of the way,
he said, waving at Atari. The jelly understood well enough to move back, clearing the opening. Kira here. We are being boarded by Renawi from the battered Hierophant. Near scent of understanding, colored with some eagerness.
Atari here. I understand. I will do my best to protect your co-forms, Idealis.
Kira here. Thank you.
Falcone said, Let's go, let's go! Kira, Nielsen, Doc, go grab weapons for everyone. Sparrow, you're with me. Move!
Along with Vishal, Kira trotted after Nielsen through the darkened corridors to the wallfish's small armory. The air in the ship was hot and smelled like burnt plastic. At the closet-sized room, they scooped up blasters and firearms both. Kira nearly didn't bother picking one for herself. If she was going to fight, the soft blade would be her best weapon. It seemed more appropriate to think of the Xeno as the soft blade when heading into battle, although the prospect of again committing violence with the Seed felt profoundly wrong. Nevertheless, Kira knew it would be overconfident of her not to have another option, so she grabbed a blaster and slung it over her shoulder. Despite the sawtooth buzz of fear riding on her nerves, she felt relief. The waiting was over. Now the only thing she had to focus on was survival, hers and the crew's. Everything else was irrelevant. Life became so much simpler when you were faced with a physical threat. The danger was clarifying. The Xeno responded to her mood, stiffening and thickening and preparing itself in unseen ways for the chaos about to commence. The change in the suit's distribution reminded her of her distant flesh, the black coating that had devoured the interior of her cabin. If need be, she could call upon it, draw it to her, and allow the soft blade to once more swell in size. Here, said Nielsen, and tossed Kira several canisters, two blue and two yellow.
Chalk and chaff should have some handy.
Thanks. Arms piled high with weapons, the three of them hurried back through the corridors to the main shaft of the wallfish. Atari and the Entropists were waiting for them there, but Falcone and Sparrow were nowhere to be seen. While Nielsen kitted out the Entropists, Kira offered Atari a choice of blasters or slug throwers. The alien chose two blasters, which it grasped with the bony arms that unfolded from the underside of its carapace.
Captain,
Kira heard Nielsen say in a warning tone. Falcone's voice sounded over the intercom.
Working on it. Get into position. We'll be there in two shakes.
The first officer hardly seemed reassured. Kira couldn't blame her. Along with Atari, they obeyed the captain and arranged themselves in a ring around the tube, hiding behind the sides of the open pressure doors. They just finished when first Sparrow and then Falcone came stomping out of the nearest corridor, garbed head to toe in power armor. As if by prior agreement, Sparrow positioned herself on one side of the shaft while Falcone did the same on the other.
Thought you might want this,
Nielsen said, and tossed Falcone his grenade launcher. He gave her a tense nod.
Thanks, owe you one.
Seeing both Sparrow and Falcone in their armor made Kira feel slightly less apprehensive about facing the incoming jellies. At least everything wouldn't be riding on just her. although she worried about them putting themselves front and center, especially Falcone. The lights flickered, and for a second, red emergency strips illuminated the room.
Power at 25% and dropping, Falcone read off his overlay.
Shit. 5 more minutes and we'll be dead in the water.
Contact,
said Hua Chung, and the wall fish shuddered as the jelly pod collided with it somewhere below. A brash tone echoed overhead, and Kira grabbed a handhold as the ship's engines cut out.
Showtime,
Sparrow muttered. She raised her metal-clad arms and aimed the Exo's built-in weapons toward the bottom of the shaft. 4. A series of strange noises sounded to the aft, somewhere in the A cargo hold, bangs and clattering and dull thuds, as if tentacles slapping against the sealed pressure doors. Kira allowed the soft blade's mask to cover her face. Taking deep breaths to steady herself, she shouldered her blaster and aimed down the shaft. Soon.
Once they breach, said Hua Chang, they'll have 14 seconds until the next set of pressure doors seal.
Got it,
said Sparrow. In her armor she couldn't really hide. She filled most of a doorway like a giant metal gorilla, faceless behind a mirrored helmet. Likewise, Falcone stood mostly exposed in his own set of armor, although he kept his visor semi-transparent, the better to see.
Bang!
Kira felt a spike of compressed air in her ears, even through the suit's mask. She worked her jaw, a dull ache forming along the base of her skull. Smoke appeared at what had been the bottom of the shaft, and that, in weightlessness, now appeared to be the far end of a long tube. The wallfish's pressure alarm began to blare. A breath of wind touched Kira's cheek, the most dangerous of sensations on a spaceship. Around her, the crew started firing with blasters and slug throwers as the dark, many-armed shapes of the jellies swarmed into the central shaft. Graspers, desperate and despised. The aliens didn't stay to fight. Instead, they darted across the tube and disappeared down another corridor. Seconds later, an unseen pressure by the cargo hold slammed shut with an ominous clang, and the wind ceased.
Shit, they're heading toward engineering, said Falcone, peering down the shaft. They can incapacitate the whole ship from there, said Hua Chung.
As if to prove her point, the lights flickered again and then went out entirely, leaving them bathed in the dull red radiance of the backups. Then the most unexpected sight caught their attention. A single tentacle unfurled from within a doorway at the end of the shaft. Wrapped in its deadly embrace was the transparent cryo box that contained none other than Runcible, still frozen in hibernation. Even through his visor, Kira saw Falcone's face contort with rage.
God damn it, no!
He growled, and was about to launch himself aftward when Nielsen caught his arm.
Captain, she said, matching his intensity, it's a trap. They'll overpower you. But not a chance.
Sparrow joined them.
She's right.
The only one who could do anything was Kira, and she knew it. Was she really going to risk her life for the pig? Well, why not? A life was a life, and she had to face the jellies at some point. Might as well be now. She just wished it didn't have to happen on the wallfish. The tentacle gently waved the pig back and forth in an unmistakable invitation.
Those fuckers,
said Falcone. He half-raised the grenade launcher and then stopped.
Can't get a good shot.
The emergency lights failed then, leaving them in pure and unfriendly darkness for several heartbeats. Via infrared, Kira could still make out the shape of her surroundings, and she noticed an odd confluence of EM fields along the shaft, swirling fountains of violet force. Plasma containment field failing, Morvan announced. Please evacuate immediately. Repeat, please.
Hua Chung groaned.
The light snapped back on, first red, and then the normal full-spectrum glare of the standard strips, bright enough to hurt. A faint tremor shook the plating of the walls, and then booming through the wallfish came an enormous, bellowing voice.
Put down that pig!
Grigorovich. 5. The pressure door at the end of the shaft slammed shut, cutting off the jelly's tentacle amid a spurt of orange ichor. The tentacle floated free, twisting and writhing in apparent agony. It threw Runcible's cryo box against the wall, and the box bounced, tumbling several times in the shaft before Falcone managed to snare it. The box and the pig inside appeared unharmed, save for a deep scratch along one side.
Perforate that thing,
said Falcone, pointing at the tentacle. Nielsen, Sparrow, and Kira happily obliged.
Welcome back, my symbiotic infestation,
cried Grigorovich.
Oh, happy day that we should be reunited, my bothersome little meatbags. Such dark times they were, with me lost in the twisting maze of fruitless fallacies, and you off gallivanting in meddlesome misadventures. How fortunate for you a luminous lantern led me back. Rejoice, for I am reborn. What have you done to this poor snail of a ship, I'll assume control of operations if you don't mind. Morven, alas, poor Simulcrum, isn't fit for the task. First to purge this grotesque bit of alien coding infecting my processors and... done. Venting and stabilizing reactor. Now to show these sump sniffers what I'm really capable of. Wee-hee! About time, said Falcone.
Hey-ya! Said Sparrow, slapping the bulkhead. Missed your head, Case.
Don't get too carried away,
said Nielsen, giving the ceiling a warning glance.
Me? Carried away? Said the ship mind. Well, I never. Please remove all hands and feet from walls, floors, ceilings, and handholds.
Said Vishal. Kira here, Itari, move away from the walls. The jelly responded to the urgency of her scent with gratifying swiftness. It withdrew its tentacles and stabilized itself in midair with small puffs of gas along the equator of its carapace. A dangerous hum filled the air, and Kira felt the skin of the Xeno prickle and crawl. Then from behind the door that had severed the tentacle, teeth-jarring discharges sounded, mini crashes of lightning snapping and crackling and buzzing. And a horrible burnt-meat smell drifted toward them.
All taken care of,
said Grigorovich with evident satisfaction.
There's your fried calamari, Sparrow. My apologies, Hua Chung, but you'll have to replace some of the wiring.
The machine boss smiled.
That's okay.
You heard what I said earlier?
Sparrow asked. The shipmine cackled.
Oh, yes, faint as feathers, a voice echoing across misty water.
How? Said Falcone. We had you isolated from the rest of the ship. Grigorovich sniffed.
Ah, well, see now, Hua Chung may have her little secrets, but I have mine as well. Once my mind was cleared of perfidious visions and debilitating doubts, it was quite a simple challenge to circumvent. Oh, yes, it was. A twist of that, a dab of this, lizard's leg and adder's fork, and a sly bit of mischievous talk.
I don't know, said Nielsen. I think I preferred you the way you were before. But she was smiling. What about Mr. Fuzzypants? Vishal asked.
Safe as buttons, replied Grigorovich. Now then, to address our larger situation, you've placed us in a most precarious pickle, my friends. Yes, you have.
Falcone fixed his gaze on a nearby camera mounted to the wall. You sure you're up for this? A ghostly hand, blue and hairy, appeared projected from the nearest screen. It gave a thumbs up. And the shipmind said,
Right as horses and twice as obnoxious. Wait, that didn't make sense. But yes, good to go, Captain, even if I weren't. You really want to take on the many-armed horde without me?
Falcone sighed. You crazy bastard.
That I am.
Grigorovich sounded positively smug. Nielsen said, The plan was...
Yes,
said Grigorovich.
I know the plan. All records and recordings reviewed, filed, and archived. However, the plan is, to put it delicately, well and truly fucked. 21 jellies are currently inbound, and they appear anything but friendly.
Well, you have any ideas in that big brain of yours?
Sparrow asked.
Indeed I do, whispered Grigorovich. Permission to take action, Captain. Drastic action is required if you, or I, or that pig in your arms are to have any chance of seeing the bright light of morn.
Falcone hesitated a long moment. Then his chin jerked and he said, Do it. Grigorovich laughed.
Ha ha ha! Your trust is most precious to me, O Captain. Hold on, prepare for skew flip.
Skew flip? Exclaimed Nielsen. What do you think you're- Kira tightened her hold and closed her eyes as she felt herself and everything around her turn end for end. Then the ship mind said, resuming thrust, and the soles of her feet sank back to the deck, and she again weighed her normal amount.
Explain, said Falcone.
Seemingly unperturbed, Grigorovich said,
The knot of minds cannot defend us against all our foes, nor can they bring themselves to act against their dear leader. That leaves us with just one choice.
We still have to kill Katain, said Kira.
Exactly,
said Grigorovich, with much the same pride as an owner talking to a particularly well-behaved pet.
So we shall seize the moment by the throat and throttle it. We shall teach these aquatic reprobates the meaning of human ingenuity. There's nothing we can't turn into a weapon or make blow up, aha!
We are not ramming the Hierophant, said Falcone between clenched teeth.
Tisk tisk, who said anything about ramming?
The ship mind sounded far too amused for the situation.
Nor are we to use our fusion drive to flambé our target, for then it would explode and destroy us with it. No, that we shall not do.
Stop dancing around, Sparrow growled. What are you up to, Greg? Spit it out!
The ship mind harrumphed.
Really now, Greg? Fine, have it your way, bird name. The battered Hierophant is pulling away from us, but in 7 minutes and 42 seconds, I shall park the nose of the wallfish into the gaping wound that you gouged out of the Hierophant's hide.
What?
Sparrow and Nielsen exclaimed together. In his exo, Falcone's eyes flashed back and forth as he skimmed his overlays. His lips were pressed together, thin and white.
Oh, yes,
said Grigorovich, sounding immensely pleased with himself.
The jellies won't dare fire at us. Not when we are so close to their beloved and feared leader. And once secured in place, then you, and by that I mean most likely you, O Queen of Thorns, may sally forth and dispose of this troublesome jelly once and for all.
Vishal glanced from Falcone to Sparrow, appearing confused.
Won't the Hierophant shoot us down? What about their defenses?
Look, said Falcone, and gestured at the display. On it appeared a composite image showing the wallfish from the outside. A dense cloud of chalk enveloped them, streaming from vents by the prow and glittering with tiny ribbons of chaff. Positioned in a ring around the wallfish were 5 ships from the Knot of Mines. Even as Kira watched, their lasers fired, destroying another wave of missiles launched by the Hierophant. The wallfish rattled, but otherwise seemed unaffected.
Can we make it? She asked, quiet.
We'll find out.
Falcone turned off the display.
Better not watch. All right, everyone over to Airlock B. We're going to have a fight on our hands. A real one.
Then he handed Runcible's cryo box over to Vishal and said,
Stash him somewhere safe. Maybe sick bay.
Vishal bobbed his head as he accepted the pig.
Of course, Captain.
Again, the fear returned, crawling through Kira's insides with razor claws. Assuming they could even reach Katain, and assuming that Namarl's memories were correct, she would be facing a creature as big or bigger than the Softblade had been during their escape from Orsted. The jelly was smart, too. As smart as the largest ship mind. She shivered. Falcone saw.
Don't think about it, Falcone.
Hard not to. Kira. He touched her gently on the shoulder with his armored glove as he passed by. 6. The wallfish didn't blow up. To Kira's grateful astonishment, the 5 ships from the Knot of Mines managed to stop every missile but one, and that one missed the wallfish by several hundred meters and went screaming off into space, lost forever. She checked on the larger battle. It was going as badly as she feared. The 7th Fleet was scattered, and the jellies were picking off the UMC ships with inexorable efficiency. Seeing the number of damaged or destroyed warships put a chill in Kira's veins and filled her with renewed determination. The only way to stop the slaughter would be to kill Katain, whatever that took. What if that means blowing up the battered Hierophant while we're on it? A hard core of certitude formed inside her. Then that's what they would do. The alternative would be no less fatal. If she had to fight the jellies, she wasn't going to make it easy for them to kill her. Reaching out with her mind, she summoned the portion of the Xeno that had overgrown her cabin. She drew the orphan flesh through the corridors of the wallfish, doing her best to avoid damaging the ship, and brought it to the airlock where she was waiting, along with the rest of the crew. Nielsen yelped as the seed surged toward them in a black tide of crawling, grasping fibers.
It's okay, Kira said, but the crew still jumped back as the fibers flowed across the deck and up over her feet, legs, hips, and torso, encasing her in a layer of living armor nearly a meter thick. Though the increased bulk of the Xeno restricted Kira's movements, she felt no sense of weight, no sense of being trapped. Rather, it was as if she were surrounded by muscles eager to do her bidding.
God damn, Sparrow said. Anything else you've been holding out on us?
No, that was it, said Kira. Sparrow shook her head and swore again. Only Itari appeared unaffected by the appearance of the seed, of the Idealis. The jelly merely rubbed its tentacles and emitted a near scent of interest. A crooked smile appeared on Falcone's face.
Well, that got the pulse going.
It nearly gave me a heart attack, it did, said Vishal.
He was kneeling on the floor, repacking the contents of his medical bag. The sight was a grim reminder of what was about to happen. A sense of unreality gripped Kira. The situation seemed outlandish beyond all expectation. The events that had led them to that exact time and place were so unlikely as to be nigh on impossible. And yet here they were. An electric discharge lit the antechamber. Hua Cheng growled and bent over the four drones she was fiddling with in the corner.
Those things gonna be ready in time?
Sparrow asked. The machine boss kept her gaze fixed on the drones as she answered.
God willing, yes.
Each drone had a welding attachment built into one manipulator and a repair laser in the other. Either tool, Kira knew, could cause serious injury if misapplied, and she suspected Hua Cheng intended to misapply them most vigorously.
So, how are we going to do this? Said Nielsen.
Falcone pointed at Kira.
Simple. Kira, you take point, give us cover. We'll watch your flanks and provide supporting fire. Same as on Orsted. We cut straight through the battered Hierophant. No stopping, no turning around, no slowing down until we reach Catane.
What if someone gets hit?
Said Sparrow. She raised one sharp eyebrow.
It's gonna be a shit show in there, and you know it.
Falcone tapped his fingers against the stock of his grenade launcher.
If someone's wounded, we send them back to the wallfish.
That's...
If we can't send them back to the wallfish, we keep them with us.
His eyes roamed across their faces.
Either way, no one gets left behind. No one.
It was a comforting thought, but Kira wasn't sure if what he was proposing would really be possible. Trig. She didn't want to lose more of the crew. More of her friends. If there was anything she could do to keep them safe, anything at all, she had to seize it. No matter how frightening she found it herself.
I'll go, she said.
No one seemed to notice, so she said it again louder.
I'll go. Alone.
Silence fell in the antechamber as everyone looked at her.
Not a chance in hell, said Falcone.
Kira shook her head, ignoring the sour pit forming in her stomach.
I mean it. I've got the soft blade. It'll keep me plenty safe, safer than you are in your exos. And if it's just me, I won't have to worry about protecting anyone else.
And who will protect you, Chica? Said Sparrow, coming over to her. If a jelly decides to snipe you from around a corner, if they ambush you, if you go down, Navarez, we're all screwed.
I'm still better equipped to deal with whatever they throw at us, said Kira.
Catane, said Nielsen. She crossed her arms. If it's anything like you've described, we're going to need every bit of firepower we have in order to take it down.
Falcone said,
unless you want to let the soft blade go completely out of control.
Of all of them, he was the only one who knew of her role in creating the nightmares, and his words struck Kira's deepest fear. She set her jaw, frustrated.
I could keep you here.
A cluster of twining tendrils extended upward from her fingers, threatening. Falcone's gaze grew even more flinty.
You do that, Kira, and we'll find some way to cut or blast our way free, even if it means breaking the wallfish in two, I promise you. And then we'll still come after you. You're not going alone, Kira. And that's that.
She tried not to let the situation affect her. She tried to accept what he'd said and move on. But she couldn't. Her breath hitched in her throat as her frustration swelled.
That's it. You're just gonna get yourself hurt or killed. I don't want to go alone, but it's our best option. Why can't you-
Miss Kira, said Vishal, standing and joining them. We know the risks and-
He bowed his head. His eyes soft and round, gentle.
We accept them with open hearts.
You shouldn't have to, though, said Kira.
Vishal smiled, and the pureness of his expression stopped her.
Of course not, Miss Kira,
When life is such, yes, and war is such.
Then he surprised her with a hug. And then Nielsen hugged her as well. And both Falcone and Sparrow touched her on the shoulder with their heavy gauntlets. Kira sniffed and looked up at the ceiling to hide her tears.
Okay. Okay. We'll go together then.
It occurred to her how much she'd lucked out with the crew of the Wallfish. They were good people at heart, far more than she'd realized when she'd first arrived on board. They'd changed, too. She didn't think the crew she'd first met back at 61 Cygni would have been willing to put themselves in harm's way as they were now.
What I want to know, said Sparrow, is how we're going to find this Catane. That ship is fucking enormous. We could wander around for hours and still come up empty.
Any ideas? Said Falcone. He looked toward Atari. About you, Squid. Got anything that can help us? Kira translated the question, and the jelly replied.
Atari here. If we can swim inside, and if I can find a node to access the reticulum of the battered Hierophant, then I will be able to locate the exact location of Catane.
Huachung seemed to perk up.
Reticulum? What is...
Ask later, said Falcone. What do these nodes look like?
Atari here. Like squares of stars, they are located at junctions throughout every ship for ease of communication.
I might have seen one before, Kira said, remembering the first jelly ship she'd been on.
Atari here. Once we know where Catane is, there are drop tubes that grant passage throughout the decks. We can use them to travel quickly.
Nielsen said,
Are you going to be able to help us, Atari? Or will your genetic programming get in the way?
Atari here. As long as you do not mention why we are there, yes, I should be able to help.
A red band of unease crept across its tentacles.
Should be able to help, said Falcone.
Bah!
Sparrow looked worried.
The second the jellies get a fix on us, they're gonna swarm us.
No, said Falcone. They're gonna swarm her.
He motioned at Kira.
You keep them off our backs, Kira, and we'll keep them off yours.
She mentally prepared herself for the challenge, determined. I'll do it, Falcone grunted.
We just have to find one of these nodes. That's our first objective. After that, we go kill ourselves a jelly.
Hey, he turned toward Joris and Vera, who were crouched in one corner, gripping each other's forearms while they whispered back and forth.
What about you, Questions? Sure you're up for this?
The entropists picked up their weapons and stood. They were still garbed in their gradient robes, faces exposed. Kira wondered how they intended to survive vacuum, much less a laser blast.
Yes, thank you, prisoner, said Vera.
We would not wish to be anywhere but here, said Joris.
Still, both of the entropists looked queasy. A bark of cynical laughter escaped Sparrow.
It's more than I can say, I tell you what.
Falcone cleared his throat.
Don't think I'm going all soft, but a man couldn't ask for a better crew than you lot. Just thought I'd say that.
Well, you make a pretty good captain, Captain, said Nielsen.
Most of the time, said Huachung.
Most of the time,
Sparrow agreed. The intercom flicked on and Grigorovich said,
Contact in 60 seconds. Please secure yourselves, my delicate little meat bags. We're in for a bumpy ride.
Vishal shook his head.
Ah, that is not comforting, not at all.
Nielsen touched her forehead and murmured something in an undertone. Kira switched to her overlays. Ahead of them, she saw the battered Hierophant on swift approach. Up close, the jelly ship appeared even more massive, round and white, with spindles and antennas protruding along its bulky midsection. The hole blasted by the Cassaba howitzer had exposed a long stack of decks within the ship, dozens upon dozens of chambers of unknown function, now exposed to the cold of space. Floating within, she spotted several jellies, some still alive, most dead and surrounded with icicles of frozen ichor. With the Hierophant looming over them, Kira could again feel the same aching draw she'd experienced before, the compulsion of the vanished urging her to reply. She allowed herself a grim smile. Somehow she didn't think Catane or its graspers were going to like how she answered the summons.
Graspers?
She was falling into the thought pattern of the soft blade, seed. Well, why not? They fit. The jellies were many-limbed graspers, and today she was going to remind them why they should fear the Idealis. Next to her, she scented sickness from Atari. It shivered, turning unpleasant shades of green and brown.
Atari here. It is difficult for me to even be here, Idealis.
Kira here. Just concentrate on protecting my co-forms. Worry not about the great and mighty Katain. What you are doing is completely unrelated. The jelly rippled with a wave of purple.
Itari here. That is helpful, Idealis. Thank you.
As the wallfish nosed into the hole the howitzer had torn out of the battered hierophant, and the half-melted decks darkened the view outside the wallfish's sapphire windows, Falcone said,
Hey, Grigorovich, you're in fine form. How about a few words to send us on our way?
The ship pretended to clear his throat.
Fine. Hear me now. The Lord of Empty Spaces protect us as we venture forth to fight our foes, guide our hands and our thoughts, and guide our weapons that we may work our will upon these perversions of peace. Let daring be our shield, and righteous fury be our sword. And may our enemies flee at the sight of those who defend the defenseless, and may we stand unbowed and unbroken in the face of evil. Today is the day of wrath, and we are the instruments of our species' retribution. Deo duce ferro comitante. Amen.
Amen, said Hua Chong and Nielsen.
Now that was a prayer, said Sparrow, grinning.
Thank you, bird name.
A bit more warlike than I'd prefer, said Kira, but it'll do. Falcone hoisted his grenade launcher onto his shoulder.
Let's just hope someone was listening.
Then the wallfish lurched around them as it came to a rest amid the bowels of the battered hierophant. If not for the soft blade holding her against the wall, Kira would have been thrown to the floor. The others staggered, and Nielsen fell to one knee. The rumble of the fusion engine cut out, but a sensation of weight remained as the hierophant's artificial gravity encompassed the wallfish. 7. Outside the airlock, Kira saw what appeared to be a storage room, stacked with rows of translucent pink globules arranged around a dark, stem-like growth. Racks of unidentifiable equipment lined the three walls that hadn't been vaporized by the Kasaba howitzer. Droplets of slag had frozen to the grated floor, the curved walls, and the familiar tripart shell that acted as a door. Everything visible would be highly radioactive, but that was the least of their concerns at the moment. No jellies were visible in the chamber. A stroke of good luck Kira hadn't been expecting.
Not bad, Greg, said Falcone. Everyone ready?
One moment,
said Hua Chong, still bent over her drones. Falcone's eyes narrowed.
Hurry it up, we're sitting ducks here.
The machine boss muttered something in Korean. Then she straightened, and the drones rose into the air with an annoying buzz.
Ready,
said Hua Chong.
Finally.
Falcone hit the release, and the airlock's inner door rolled open.
Time to make some noise.
Kira said and looked at the entropists. How were they supposed to breathe in a vacuum? She needn't have worried. As one, Vera and Joris drew their hoods over their faces. The fabric hardened and shimmered, growing transparent and forming a solid seal around their necks, same as any skin suit helmet.
Neat trick,
Sparrow said. The silence of vacuum swallowed them as Falcone vented the airlock and opened the outer door. In an instant, the only sounds Kira could hear were those of her breathing, those of her pulse. Then her earpiece emitted a scrap of static, and from it Grigorovich said, sounding startlingly close,
Oh dear.
Oh dear?
Falcone said, his voice sharp and somewhat tinny over the radio. The ship mind seemed reluctant to answer.
I'm sorry to say, my dear friends, most sorry indeed, but I fear that cleverness may no longer be sufficient to save us. For all, luck must inevitably run out, and run out for us it has.
And on Kira's overlays an image of the system appeared. At first she didn't understand what she was seeing. The blue and yellow dots that marked the positions of the jellies and the UMC respectively were half hidden behind a constellation of red.
What?
Sparrow started to say.
Alas,
said Grigorovich, and for the first time he seemed genuinely sorry.
Alas, the nightmares have decided to join the fight, and this time they've brought something else with them. Something big. It's broadcasting on all channels. Calls itself The Maw.